Chapter 12. Mrs. Brimpton seldom went out in winter. Only on the finest days did she walk an hour at noon on the south terrace. Excepting Mr. Ranford, we had no visitors but the doctor, who drove over from D about once a week. He sent for me once or twice, to give me some trifling direction about my mistress, and though he never told me what her illness was, I thought, from a waxy look as he had now, and then of a morning, that it might be the heart that ailed her. The season was soft and unwholesome, and in January we had a long spell of rain. That was a sore trial to me, I own, for I couldn't go out, and sitting over my sewing all day, listening to the drip, drip of the eaves, I grew so nervous, that the least sound made me jump. Somehow, the thought of that locked room across the passage, began to weigh on me. Once or twice, in the long rainy nights, I fancied I heard noises there, but that was nonsense, of course, and the daylight drove such notions out of my head. Well, one morning Mrs. Brimpton gave me quite a start of pleasure by telling me she wished me to go to town for some shopping. I hadn't known till then how low my spirits had fallen. I set off in high glee, and my first sight of the crowded streets and the cheerful-looking shops quite took me out of myself. Toward afternoon, however, the noise and confusion began to tire me, and I was actually looking forward to the quiet of Brimpton, and thinking how I should enjoy the drive home through the dark woods, when I ran across an old acquaintance, a maid I had once been in service with. We had lost sight of each other for a number of years, and I had to stop and tell her what had happened to me in the interval. When I mentioned where I was living, she rolled up her eyes and pulled a long face. What? The Mrs. Brimpton, that lives all the year at her place on the Hudson? My dear, you won't stay there 3 months. Oh, but I don't mind the country, says I, offended somehow at her tone. Since the fever, I'm glad to be quiet. She shook her head. It's not the country I'm thinking of. All I know is she's had 4 maids in the last 6 months, and the last one, who was a friend of mine, told me nobody could stay in the house. Did she say why? I asked. No, she wouldn't give me her reason. But she says to me, Mrs. Ansie, she says, if ever a young woman as you know of thinks of going there, you tell her it's not worth while to unpack her boxes. Is she young and handsome? Said I, thinking of Mr. Brimpton. Not her. She's the kind that mothers engage when they've gay young gentlemen at college. Well, though I knew the woman was an idle gossip, the words stuck in my head, and my heart sank lower than ever as I drove up to Brimpton in the dusk. There was something about the house I was sure of it now. When I went in to tea, I heard that Mr. Brimpton had arrived, and I saw at a glance that there had been a disturbance of some kind. Mrs. Blinder's hand shook, so that she could hardly pour the tea, and Mr. Wace quoted the most dreadful texts full of brimstone. Nobody said a word to me then, but when I went up to my room, Mrs. Blinder followed me. Oh, my dear, says she, taking my hand, I'm so glad and thankful you've come back to us. That struck me, as you may imagine. W.Y., said I, did you think I was leaving for good? No, no, to be sure, said she, a little confused, but I can't abear to have Madam left alone for a day even. She pressed my hand hard, and, oh, Miss Hartley, says she, comma, be good to your mistress, as you're a Christian woman. And with that she hurried away, and left me staring. A moment later Agnes called me to Mrs. Brimpton. Hearing Mr. Brimpton's voice in her room, I went round by the dressing room, thinking I would lay out her dinner gown before going in. The dressing room is a large room with a window over the portico that looks toward the gardens. Mr. Brimpton's apartments are beyond. When I went in, the door into the bedroom was ajar, and I heard Mr. Brimpton saying angrily, "Ne would suppose he was the only person fit for you to talk to." "I don't have many visitors in winter," Mrs. Brimpton answered quietly. "You have me," he flung at her, sneering. "You are here so seldom," said she. "Well, whose fault is that? You make the place about as lively as a family vault. With that I rattled the toilet things to give my mistress warning, and she rose and called me in. The two dined alone, as usual, and I knew by Mr. Wace's manner at supper that things must be going badly. He quoted the prophets something terrible, and worked on the kitchen maid, so that she declared she wouldn't go down alone to put the cold meat in the icebox. I felt nervous myself, and after I had put my mistress to bed I was half tempted to go down again, and persuade Mrs. Blinder to sit up a while over a game of cards. But I heard her door closing for the night, and so I went on to my own room. The rain had begun again, and the drip, drip, drip seemed to be dropping into my brain. I lay awake listening to it, and turning over what my friend in town had said. What puzzled me was that it was always the maids who left. After a while I slept, but suddenly a loud noise wakened me. My bell had rung. I sat up, terrified by the unusual sound, which seemed to go on jangling through the darkness. My hands shook, so that I couldn't find the matches. At length I struck a light and jumped out of bed. I began to think I must have been dreaming, but I looked at the bell against the wall, and there was the little hammer still quivering. I was just beginning to huddle on my clothes when I heard another sound. This time it was the door of the locked room opposite mine softly opening and closing. I heard the sound distinctly, and it frightened me, so that I stood stock still. Then I heard a footstep hurrying down the passage toward the main house. The floor being carpeted, the sound was very faint, but I was quite sure it was a woman's step. I turned cold with the thought of it, and for a minute or two I durstn't breathe or move. Then I came to my senses. Alice Hartley, says I to myself. Someone left that room just now, and ran down the passage ahead of you. The idea isn't pleasant, but you may as well face it. Your mistress has rung for you, and to answer her bell you've got to go the way that other woman has gone. Well, I did it. I never walked faster in my life, yet I thought I should never get to the end of the passage or reach Mrs. Brimpton's room. On the way I heard nothing and saw nothing. All was dark, and quiet as the grave. When I reached my mistress's door the silence was so deep, that I began to think I must be dreaming, and was half-minded to turn back. Then a panic seized me, and I knocked. There was no answer, and I knocked again, loudly. To my astonishment the door was opened by Mr. Brimpton. He started back when he saw me, and in the light of my candle his face looked red and savage. Ooh. He said, in a queer voice. How many of you are there, in God's name? At that I felt the ground give under me, but I said to myself that he had been drinking, and answered as steadily as I could, colon, may I go in, sir? Mrs. Brimpton has rung for me. You may all go in, for what I care, says he, and, pushing by me, walked down the hall to his own bedroom. I looked after him as he went, and to my surprise I saw that he walked as straight as a sober man. I found my mistress lying very weak and still, but she forced a smile when she saw me, and signed to me to pour out some drops for her. After that she lay without speaking, her breath coming quick, and her eyes closed. Suddenly she groped out with her hand, and, Emma, says she, faintly. It's Hartley, madam, I said. Do you want anything? She opened her eyes wide, and gave me a startled look. I was dreaming, she said. Why, you may go now, Hartley, and thank you kindly. I'm quite well again, you see. And she turned her face away from me. 3. There was no more sleep for me that night, and I was thankful when daylight came. Soon afterward, Agnes called me to Mrs. Brimpton. I was afraid she was ill again, for she seldom sent for me before 9, but I found her sitting up in bed, pale and drawn looking, but quite herself. Hartley, says she quickly, will you put on your things at once, and go down to the village for me? I want this prescription made up. Here she hesitated a minute, and blushed, and I should like you to be back again before Mr. Brimpton is up. Certainly, madam, I said. And stay a moment, she called me back, as if an idea had just struck her. While you're waiting for the mixture, you'll have time to go on to Mr. Ranford's with this note. It was a 2-mile walk to the village, and on my way I had time to turn things over in my mind. It struck me as peculiar that my mistress should wish the prescription made up without Mr. Brimpton's knowledge, and, putting this together with the scene of the night before, and with much else that I had noticed and suspected, I began to wonder if the poor lady was weary of her life, and had come to the mad resolve of ending it. The idea took such hold on me that I reached the village on a run, and dropped breathless into a chair before the chemist's counter. The good man, who was just taking down his shutters, stared at me so hard that it brought me to myself. "Mr. Limmel," I says, trying to speak indifferent, "will you run your eye over this, and tell me if it's quite right?" He put on his spectacles and studied the prescription. "Why, it's one of Dr. Walton's," says he. "What should be wrong with it?" "Well, is it dangerous to take?" "Dangerous, how do you mean?" I could have shaken the man for his stupidity. "I mean if a person was to take too much of it by mistake, of course," says I, my heart in my throat. "Lord bless you, no. It's only lime water. You might feed it to a baby by the bottleful." I gave a great sigh of relief, and hurried on to Mr. Ranford's. But on the way another thought struck me. If there was nothing to conceal about my visit to the chemist's, was it my other errand that Mrs. Brimpton wished me to keep private? Somehow, that thought frightened me worse than the other. Yet the two gentlemen seemed fast friends, and I would have staked my head on my mistress's goodness. I felt ashamed of my suspicions, and concluded that I was still disturbed by the strange events of the night. I left the note at Mr. Ranford's, and, hurrying back to Brimpton, slipped in by a side door without being seen, as I thought. An hour later, however, as I was carrying in my mistress's breakfast, I was stopped in the hall by Mr. Brimpton. "What were you doing out so early?" he says, looking hard at me. "Early me, sir?" I said, in a tremble. "Come, come," he says, an angry red spot coming out on his forehead. "Didn't I see you scuttling home through the shrubbery an hour or more ago?" I'm a truthful woman by nature, but at that a lie popped out ready-made. "And no, sir, you didn't," said I, and looked straight back at him. He shrugged his shoulders, and gave a sullen laugh. I suppose you think I was drunk last night?" he asked suddenly. "No, sir, I don't," I answered, this time truthfully enough. He turned away with another shrug. A pretty notion my servants have of me," I heard him mutter as he walked off. Not till I had settled down to my afternoon sewing did I realize how the events of the night had shaken me. I couldn't pass that locked door without a shiver. I knew I had heard someone come out of it, and walk down the passage ahead of me. I thought of speaking to Mrs. Blinder, or to Mr. Wace, the only two in the house who appeared to have an inkling of what was going on, but I had a feeling that if I questioned them, they would deny everything, and that I might learn more by holding my tongue and keeping my eyes open. The idea of spending another night opposite the locked room sickened me, and once I was seized with the notion of packing my trunk and taking the first train to town. But it wasn't in me to throw over a kind mistress in that manner, and I tried to go on with my sewing, as if nothing had happened. I hadn't worked 10 minutes before the sewing machine broke down. It was one I had found in the house, a good machine, but a trifle out of order. Mrs. Blinder said it had never been used since Emma Saxon's death. I stopped to see what was wrong, and as I was working at the machine, a drawer which I had never been able to open slid forward, and a photograph fell out. I picked it up and sat looking at it in a maze. It was a woman's likeness, and I knew I had seen the face somewhere. The eyes had an asking look that I had felt on me before, and suddenly I remembered the pale woman in the passage. I stood up, cold all over, and ran out of the room. My heart seemed to be thumping in the top of my head, and I felt as if I should never get away from the look in those eyes. I went straight to Mrs. Blinder. She was taking her afternoon nap, and sat up with a jump when I came in. Mrs. Blinder, said I, who is that? And I held out the photograph. She rubbed her eyes and stared. Why, Emma Saxon, says she. Where did you find it? I looked hard at her for a minute. Mrs. Blinder, I said, I've... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.